today on the Travel Guys, live from Sacramento and Kapaha, Hawaii.
In the travel news, Airbnb rolls out new security features following a mass shooting at a Halloween party house. Homeland Security may be lending a hand with Real ID, and we'll tell you the five fastest growing destinations right now for U.S. travelers leaving the country.
In our Smarter Traveler segment coming up at 3:20, we have a special interview regarding passenger safety while riding with Uber, which originally appeared on the Washington Post's website.
If you ride share, you'll want to catch that story at 3:20. Our friends at Travelers United in Washington are watching airline evacuation tests. We'll tell you why that's pretty important stuff starting at 3:35.
And we close the show today talking with Joe Brancatelli from an online site called Joe Sent Me. If you play the airline mileage game or are thinking about playing it, or play it and hate it, Joe has some valuable information for you.
Hang around for an hour and you will be a smarter traveler. Thank you for spending part of your Sunday with us. We are the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets to paradise.
North to Alaska. I go north to Russia's own.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys here on KFBK. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. We are brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, as always, and thanks for taking a minute out of your day to spend with us. Don't forget now, you can follow along at TravelGuysRadio.com. Links to our special guests and all can be found there. I'm here in the studio with Kevin because Luis chose to not show up. He went up to Reno for his birthday, Mark. And, you know, I saw some Facebook stuff. He stayed in the presidential suite and he won money. And, you know, there was photograph. I shouldn't be telling this, should I?
Hopefully we'll get a share of that money when he gets back, I would think, you know, being the travel guys and stuff.
There you go. But anyway, he wasn't able to make it in. So Kevin, who's pretty new to us here in the building, is just doing a killer job of keeping things together for us. So You're over on the islands.
Yeah, I would say you've gotten the short end here. Luis is up in Reno celebrating his birthday in the presidential suite, and I'm in here in Hawaii on Kauai, which is one of my favorite places on the whole planet, and you're stuck in the studio in Sacramento. So
yeah, and I think I have laundry to do when I get home too.
I'm not sure who got the short end of this stick, but I think all signs point to you, my friend.
All right.
So things are wonderful as always over here in the islands. Of course, the Southwest spent all week in Sacramento having a party at Fremont Park and giving away tickets and frequent flyer miles and all kinds of stuff to people. Perhaps some of the folks who are listening were a part of that.
So
Southwest service is starting today over to Honolulu.
This is it. I got to leave. I think I had a flight.
Yeah, exactly. So there are going to be more inexpensive ways to get to and from the island. So if you've never been here before, this might be your opportunity. Do your homework. Look at prices and look at times of the year and stuff like that, because there are high and low seasons in Hawaii, just like every place else. And there are times on some islands, at a particular point on the calendar might be a high time, whereas on another island it might not be, depending on where the whales are in the water and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, all right. Well, look, we got lots to cover today on the program, so let's get to it. At the top of every Travel Guys radio program, Mark brings us up to date on the travel news. So, buddy, what do you got for us today?
Well, Tom, Homeland Security is seeking... They're going to try to help this Real ID situation. What's happening now is that heads are getting together and figuring out that there are some almost 100 million people in the country who might need a real ID who do not have one. And people are doing the math and figuring out that, wow, what's going to happen? It's not the road warrior or the person who travels a lot who's going to get stuck with this real ID situation come October 1 of next year, Tom. It's the people who travel infrequently, who haven't traveled for 2 or 3 years or only get on an airplane when they're going to someone's wedding or someone's funeral or something like that. They're really not big travelers. And on very short notice, suddenly they're going to find themselves in need of being of having to get on an airplane. And unless they have a passport or one of the other alternative, you know, a military ID, one of the other alternative ways, they're going to be in trouble. And that's, I think, what the point is to the general public is, even if you don't fly regularly, this is something you need to consider getting, because who knows when you may need to fly irregularly. And if you don't have the right ID, you're not going to be able to get on the airplane. So what the Department of Homeland Security is taking a look at is there a way for them to simplify or to put more of the process online? Your lovely wife went through this whole process just a few weeks ago, right, Thomas? And she filled out quite a bit of her stuff ahead of time.
She did. And then that's the recommendation, you know, go to the DMV website. It's right in front of you, because it's the most important thing going on with the DMV right now. So get an early jump start on it and see if you can get it done. So how's Homeland Security lending a hand?
Well, they're hoping to create a protocol that will allow more of this to go online, so that it will make it a little bit easier, so that people who are flooding DMV offices around the country perhaps won't have to be there as long. Also, as you and I have talked about on here before, there are quite a few things that you need to take with you to get a real ID that you wouldn't need to take when you are getting your driver's license renewed at any other time. And what's happening is that almost 60% of people are showing up at the local DMV offices and having to make a second trip. Almost 20% are having to make a third trip. So that's the issue right now, is that what Homeland Security is hoping to do is get people somehow to enter more of this information online ahead of time. So by the time they go to the DMV office, there's no chance of them not having what they need, because that all of that information has already been collected.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I suppose if you have an electronic document of your birth certificate, of your marriage license, a couple of other things, if you had a name change along the way, that you might be able to upload that to this site. But, you know, that's problematic for a lot of folks, being able to do that technical stuff, just being able to gather the right stuff and show up and show it to somebody in person. And it's hard enough these days.
Well, and if you go to travelguysradio.com, right on the right-hand side of the homepage there, where it lists all the highlights from this week's show, we've left up there for a few weeks a couple of links to the real ID, driver's licenses, and to some of the questions that people have about it. So hopefully at travelguysradio.com there will be something there that will help you a little bit and help you be able to muddle through this. But really and truly, if you're one of the folks who's out there saying, well, you know, the last time I got on an airplane was 18 years ago, you're probably exactly the person that they're most concerned about, because you're the person who may not have an alternative form of ID and may need to get on an airplane on short notice. All right, well, let's move along from there. Airlines have decided now, both Southwest and American, have extended their Boeing 737 MAX cancellations off their schedules until early March. That is 2 months further than they had previously done so. Boeing continues to insist that they think that the FAA will approve those aircraft for flying before the end of the year. But Tom, I think the longer this stretches out and the more times that these airlines have to push back when they're putting these planes back on the schedule, when they put them on the schedule, they're going to have to spend a lot of time and effort telling people that you're flying on these airplanes. And I have spoken to people who say they won't fly on them, or they would be very apprehensive about flying on them. So, and of course, the airlines have not approached Boeing yet to get damages from all of the money that they've lost by not able to being able to have these planes in the sky. But anyway, if you're waiting for a schedule to come back or something like that that had gone away over the last year, it's not likely to show up again before March, because that's when the extra planes are going to be out in the sky. And I have to wonder when Boeing is going to run out of room to park planes up there in Seattle, because they're continuing to make 737 MAX aircraft while all this is going on. Airbnb, Tom, you remember it's just been, what, a couple short weeks ago with that horrible Halloween party at the rental home there in Northern California. Five people were killed?
Yeah.
My goodness, that was an Airbnb rental. And
well,
so
it was, but it, you know, I'm sure the people that rented it out didn't expect it to turn into hundreds of people at a party and shootings. There's a lot to be learned there.
Of course, Airbnb has rules against things like that, but it's a fairly well-known fact that it's not a well-kept secret. This is not the first time that an Airbnb rental has turned into a party house. Anyway, their CEO, Brian Chesky, has announced in New York last week that they're going to step up the security. They're going to review all of the hosts and listings and have them verified by the end of next year. I guess I would have thought that would have been mandatory up front. But
Seven million. They're going to have to verify.
A new guest guarantee for guests that arrive at a property that doesn't match what was presented online, and a thing called a neighbor hotline, which they emphasize will be staffed by real people. So that's what we've gotten to with this online third-party stuff. When somebody actually is giving you a real person to talk to, they want to brag about it. So there you go. Listen, it's not always safe to travel for everybody. LGBT travelers have reported that they hide their fear, their identity when traveling. Some LGBT travelers, up to 95%, have felt the need to hide their orientation. 85% have gone so far as to change their travel arrangements out of concern for their safety, which compares to just 53% of the general population. And it's not just LGBT people who are experiencing some significant fear when they're traveling. Travel Pulse reports that 3 in 4 female business travelers, 77%, have reported having experienced some sort of harassment or mistreatment while traveling. The survey was pretty extensive. Tapped 7,800 business travelers in 19 global markets. Also reveals that nearly half of young female business travelers face discrimination, which materializes in a variety of ways, including people asking them on a regular basis if they're traveling with their husbands. I'm sure young female travelers could tell us a little bit more about some of those things. All right, quickly here to wrap up the news. The 5 fastest growing international destinations among U.S. travelers. If you are heading overseas, these are pulled by Squaremouth, and they pull these based on travel insurance sales, which is kind of an interesting way to decide where people, what the new destinations that are hot. These are based on travel insurance sales for trips occurring between January 1st and December 31st of this year. Egypt is the number one position for the second year in a row. It has 84% more people going over the same period in 2018. The Virgin Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands, was second, followed by Puerto Rico. Of course, those are areas that were hit by hurricanes a couple years ago, so it seems logical that they would have seen a resurgence in visitor demand. Portugal is fourth on the list, and Panama, which recorded a 33% rise in visitor arrivals this year from the United States, came in first. So some interesting destinations, I think, there on the fastest growing currently international destinations for U.S. travelers. And Thomas, that is the travel news for today.
And if you're just joining us, we are the Travel Guys. Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Coming up in our Smarter Traveler segment after the short break, we have a special interview regarding passenger safety while riding with Uber. This is a particular feature originated in the Washington Post's website, and we're going to repurpose it with some special touches. You're going to enjoy this. It's important. It's next on The Travel Guys. Hey there, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano here. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, here to make you a smarter traveler. Brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. Mark, I got something we've been talking about for a little while, Uber.
safety of being an Uber passenger.
Yeah, ride-sharing. You know,
ride-sharing on the whole, not necessarily just Uber.
Well,
but,
exactly. It's how safe is all of this and what systems are in place to ensure people's safety? And if something happens, then where do things go? You know, I mean, what kind of systems are there to protect you before the fact, and what kind of systems are there to protect you after the fact? What you're about to hear is an interview between a former Uber trainer and reporters from the Washington Post newspaper. You can see and hear the full interview at travelguysradio.com. During the interview, I'll offer a few limited comments summarizing what you would see on the screen if you were watching the video in person. Got it? Here we go.
My name is Lily Flores. I was one of the trainers at Uber for about a year and a half. The office is located in downtown Phoenix, just a regular downtown building. So the special investigations unit handles anything from minor accidents all the way to up to major accidents. They also handle things such as physical assaults, sexual assaults, very serious issues that shouldn't be happening while using the Uber platform. Say something happens during your trip, you're able to report it through the Uber app. That'll go to a team that's able to mitigate and kind of say, you know, this is something minor, we can handle this with just a, you know, maybe a refund or something, like a small reply. Or if it's something more major, then it'll go to the team, the special investigations unit team. They'll hand it off to different investigators, and then that person will then reach out to all parties involved, whether it be drivers, riders, third parties, any other a person who may have been involved in the incident, and they'll try to find out, you know, the facts of the case, and then they'll make decisions regarding, you know, if people can stay online using the app, if they need to be deactivated, so on and so forth, based off of those facts and decisions.
Uber says investigators receive 6 weeks of training before working cases.
I think a prerequisite to be an investigator is a very good idea, especially if it's the prerequisite is having some sort of background in law enforcement, whether that actually be working as a police officer or an investigator somewhere else, or even just going to school for it, just because we do have a small window to get somebody from their first day to talking to people on the phone. People with investigative backgrounds are qualified to do this job, not just any person off the street.
Investigators said Uber forbid them from contacting the police or advising victims to seek legal counsel.
At this time, investigators do not report any of the incidents that happen on the Uber app to law enforcement. Uber has their own background check system that they follow. However, with background checks, it's not always accurate because it can take up to 3 months for an incident to happen on somebody's background check. Along with that, they do not report to any other companies, any other rideshare apps, no law enforcement is involved. The lack of communication between the rideshare apps really puts people in a very dangerous position. If they were reporting it, then that person doesn't have access to being in a vehicle with a stranger anymore. There's about 7 different what they call case types. So that would be, again, like the physical assault, robbery, assault with a deadly weapon, something like that. So of those 7, I would say the majority of the cases would be the sexual assaults.
Uber does not disclose the number of sexual assault incidents. And on May 15th of last year, Uber's chief legal officer committed to publishing a safety transparency report that will include data on sexual assaults and other incidents. As of last month, Uber has not published the promised report.
The worst possible outcome for a driver partner or a rider is to be deactivated from the Uber app. That will only happen under a few different circumstances. One, if this is maybe the second or third report of a similar incident happening to or from that person. Another one would be is if we have actual corroborative evidence of with maybe videos or pictures or police reports, anything of that nature. And the third possible way for somebody to be deactivated is if they actually admit to the incident.
According to a Freedom of Information request, between January 2016 and August 2019, Uber, Lyft, and Via disclosed over 1,100 driver deactivations in Chicago. About 30% stemmed from sexual misconduct.
I would tell any rider that if anything does occur and they need to talk to an investigator with a special investigations unit, to just know that person is doing their best job to help you in that moment. They're doing whatever they can with what they can. So what investigators are allowed to tell customers is very, very noncommittal. So it's nothing like, oh, I'm sorry this happened to you, or, you know, I'm sorry about everything. It's more of, I'm sorry to hear about this, or what you're describing is very concerning. So it's very, you know, it's just based off of them saying it rather than it actually happening. Therefore, that Uber can't or does not have to take responsibility for it. Investigators are there first to protect Uber and then next to protect the customer.
When asked for comment on the interview, Tracy Breeden, head of women's safety for Uber, said, "We really want the public to see that we are really focused on building a better Uber today."
Wow, I'll tell you, that's revealing. It really makes you want to stop and think quite hard about your safety and whether things are properly being checked out, doesn't it, Mark?
It's that I pick up on that is the lag time in being able to check things, so that if somebody had a clean record 3 months ago and they went to work for one of these rideshare companies and they did something 6 weeks ago, it may not show up on their record yet, so they could have done something pretty horrible. And you might not know about that. Now, I don't know how that reflects on other businesses or other. I suppose you could make the argument that that would happen in other businesses too, but you're not getting in a car and riding someone when you go and buy a burger at McDonald's. So I don't know. It's kind of an interesting situation. It's something that we will stay on top of. Uber is supposed to announce some new safety features this coming week, and if they do, we will be all over it, and I promise you we will report back on it next week.
You know, you would think that maybe in the circumstances they would find a way to shorten that window from the time that maybe something occurred and, you know, a red flag, so that they could find out sooner. But then again, you know, I suppose that just, you know, physically impossible.
Yeah, some realities. But nonetheless, maybe they can show that they're making a little bit better effort and specifically address some of the things that the lady addressed there. She wasn't telling people not to ride Uber or any other rideshare, but she was indicating that, you know, there are some things that might be of a little bit of concern there. Hey, let's shift gears just here for a second before we go to the news break. Something I was going to mention in the news. Do you know what your best choice of drink should be when you're on an airplane?
Let's see. I've heard a little bit about this. It's something about things with bubbles in it aren't necessarily good, or they are good.
Well, things with bubbles aren't necessarily good, but they're recommending, this is came off of Flyer Talk, ginger ale. And the reason they say ginger ale is the drink of choice on an airplane is because when you're way up high, everything tastes just a bit duller. And so that makes ginger ale taste a little bit better to most people. And also, it's good for your stomach. Ginger helps ease stomach upset with nervous flyers, said a noted nutritionist. So ginger ale, if you're up in the air and you're not feeling too good, you don't have any other way to get out of it, that might be the best way out of it. All right, Thomas, I guess we're about to head off here in just a moment for the news. And then we have a very busy second half of the hour.
Yes, we do. We'll be back right after this. Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, the travel and entertainment guys here on KFBK, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget now, you can travel along at travelguysradio.com. Links to our special guests can be found there. We're here to make you a smarter traveler, and doing so, we got ourselves another special guest on the line. Mark, please tell us who we're going to be talking with.
We have with us Charlie Leoka, who is the chairman of Travelers United from Washington, D.C. And Charlie's job is mostly to look after things that you and I as travelers don't necessarily have the time to look after that might be really important to us, both from a consumer standpoint and a safety standpoint. You should know that one of Charlie's current projects has to do with airlines, and for years we've watched airlines add seats to airplanes. The question is, can passengers still get safely off an airplane in an emergency in a short period of time, despite the fact that we're all kind of crammed in there like sardines? These tests have not been done for a while. Charlie's organization has been pushing to get them done again. It looks like they're going to happen, Charlie, but will they be done in a way that we can count on the results? Help us understand a little bit about this testing that's going to happen for evacuating airplanes.
Well, thanks a lot for that. We've really worked hard to try to make sure that we can still get people off of planes within 90 seconds. And unfortunately, we've been stopped at every angle by the FAA saying everything is fine, don't worry about a thing. And today, we're already seeing the problems with the FAA in terms of the grounding of the 737 MAX. And all of a sudden, the urgency of getting this done has now definitely heated up a bit. So we already don't quite have the same types of people traveling. We've got record loads of passengers right now that haven't been seen on airplanes way back since 1950s. There are tighter seats. There are larger passengers. There's more carry-on baggage than ever. There are passengers dragging baggage off during evacuations. Parents can't even sit next to their kids. If there's ever a crash, you know that they're not going to be worried about getting off the plane. They're going to be worried about getting their kids off the plane with them. And then there are lots of other problems. And we're trying to get the FAA to actually do physical testing. And just about a month ago, the deputy administrator of the FAA, Dan Elwell, during a hearing, announced in a very surprising manner to us that they were going to have testing of these of the aircraft done in Oklahoma City at an FAA facility. And they're using 750 different people, and they're trying to test the size of seats and whether or not that will affect getting off the planes. And this is in response to a bill which we finally got passed last year, more than just about 12 months ago, which requires the FAA to do this.
Charlie, let me jump in real quick here. Now, the determination of 90 seconds, how was that decided as to the time that it's going to take people to get off the plane? Question number one. And number two, the people that are going to be used, these are going to be, what, employees of the airlines? What do you know about that?
Well, right now we don't know a lot about that. The 90-second regulation that was currently used by the FAA has been in effect way back since the 1970s. And how that got into effect, other than the fact that it went through a rulemaking process and it was determined to be appropriate at that time, I really don't know. But one of the things which we did include in the bill, which was just passed last year, which these evacuations are supposed to be taken care of, was we asked to make sure that we had a representative sample of passengers. And in my discussions with the FAA and with people who are doing the testing, and during anecdotal conversations with other people who are involved in setting up the testing, I've learned that they're really not looking at putting in old people, fat people, babies, blow-up dolls, security, animals.
People in wheelchairs, perhaps, or who need other assistance.
Exactly. And so on. The only thing they want to test in November is the size of the seats and whether or not that will make a difference. And so what they're doing is they're going to be doing this test over and over again over a period of, I think, about 10 days. And they're varying the width of the seat and the legroom, which is available. And so they're trying to just have a clean data point that only deals with seat size, but doesn't deal with any other distractions which might come along during a crash.
We're talking with Charlie Leoka. He is the chairman of Travelers United in Washington, D.C., and we're talking on the Travel Guys here about some tests that are coming up to see if planes can be safely evacuated in a prompt period of time. 90 seconds is the goal, which is what it used to be, and now we're talking about all of this stuff. Aviation safety record has been very good, particularly in the United States in recent years, but in some of the recent airline emergencies, people have done some pretty strange things, like insist on trying to get their carry-on luggage and stuff off of a plane in an emergency. It strikes me that something like that is tremendously going to complicate things. Are they going, when they conduct these tests, are they going to have people with all of their stuff on the plane to try to get it off in 90 seconds, or are they just going to try to get people off?
This is what we don't know.
Uh-huh.
And we don't know exactly how they're going to put the tests into effect. We don't know how many of the exits are going to be blocked and so on. And we have asked also to have observers there at the testing site so that we can actually see and make sure that the testing is done properly.
What are the chances of that happening, do you think?
Well, as of right now, not very good.
Uh-huh.
But we're still pushing it. And part of the reason we're pushing so hard is that the FAA has told us in the past that all of the testing has been done, everything is safe, but it's all proprietary information, and it's all secret. And it's all done by the airlines, not by the FAA.
So the fox is kind of guarding the hen house here.
That's what we're beginning to think.
Yeah.
And everything that the FAA is doing these days seems to be to protect the airlines and not to protect the passengers.
Charlie, I hope that you will get back to us later in November, and so that we can, I mean, once these tests are done, however they're done, we would like to be able to report back to our people. And before I let you go here, I wanted to give you just a minute, Charlie. Can you explain a little bit about what Travelers United is and what you do? And it is a membership organization. It's a very modest fee to join. Take just a minute here and tell our listeners a little bit about your organization.
Well, Travelers United is the largest travel advocacy group in Washington. We focus on hotels in terms of trying to get rid of hotel resort fees, rental cars, trying to tell people what all the rental car fees are, and aviation. And so what we've done over the last 10 years since I started the organization is we've really become the go-to people in Washington when it comes to travel. And the membership right now is, if you want to get what we call a plus membership with some additional benefits, it runs about $29 a year, or just make a donation. And even more importantly, just go ahead and join the organization and give us your name in a mailing list, and we'll make sure that you're on our email list and on the newsletter list. And that way you'll know what's going on every time, and your voice can be added to the other thousands of people who already work together with us.
You know, Tom, I gave Travelers United that $29 that Charlie is talking about a year or so ago, and it really has turned out it's about 50 cents a week. And if you travel often, gosh, you only have to pick up one or two tips to make that $29 really worth it. And the other thing is that you know what's going on, things that might impact you as a traveler.
Okay, you've joined the Travel Guys, and coming up after the break, we're going to visit with Joe. If you play the airline mileage game or are thinking about playing it or play it and just hate it, Joe has some valuable information for you next on the Travel Guys. Hey there, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Again, now, as we do our program, if you go to TravelGuysRadio.com, you'll find links to our guests' websites and lots of information right there. So once again, TravelGuysRadio.com. Here to make you a smarter traveler, Mark, who's our guest?
Tom, we're joined by Joe Brancatelli. Joe is the author of a website called joesentme.com. It offers a variety of columnists with a wide variety of topics. And if you're a road warrior, it's a great place to just get lost for an hour or so once every couple of weeks when Joe puts it out. It is, I'll let Joe tell you a little bit about the site later on. Joe, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Nice to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Joe, you have opined recently more than once, along with other folks across the spectrum, about changes that have happened on both sides of award programs. We're now seeing award charts that used to be fairly standard. You kind of knew what you were getting into, how much a hotel was going to cost you as long as it wasn't New Year's Eve in Times Square. Now that has changed dramatically. Airlines have also announced that they are changing the way that they award miles or points or whatever it is to people. And no longer how far you fly is as important as it used to be. I would love to hear your thoughts on the changes that are happening and how that impacts the traveler on the street.
Well, I think what you need to understand, if you haven't been with this as long as God help me, I have, literally since the beginning. When the frequent flyer programs launched, a mile had some relationship to the cost. it wasn't the mileage and fare structure was not as broad and as goofy, let's say, as it is today. So airlines gave no real thought to what the currency would be. So their theory was, you fly 1 mile, you get 1 mile, and we will charge you on the award chart X number of miles, a very static approach for the award, because it was all fairly straightforward back in the real world before we got into the loyalty programs. Hotels, on the other side, did something similar, although they always based their awarding of currency based on the dollars you contributed to them. As the decades have gone on and airline fares have gotten wacky, so that you could have a person on a plane spending $99, a person on this plane spending $999, and a person at the front of the plane perhaps spending $9,999, the airline said, we will have to begin awarding you points, although they still call them miles, based on what you spend with us, not how far you fly with us, because it's wrong to say the person who got $99 fare should get the same amount of credit as the person who spent $9,999 on the fare.
Makes sense. Logical.
Okay. Now, the problem with that is also they had to adjust on the other side, which is, since airline seats do not have the same value if you buy them 6 months in advance or 6 hours in advance, they also want to charge you the number of award miles based on what a ticket might cost. That also makes sense. The secret surprise here is that as the airlines have made this switch, they've also devalued the programs rather dramatically, and it doesn't matter how much you give them or how much you fly with them, you will get less as an award. What the airlines and hotels are basically telling you is, we want your loyalty, and what we'll give you for that loyalty is virtually nothing.
Joe, is there an airline or a hotel, you know, name names, that may be a better, you know, better choice than another in regards to this kind of game?
Well, I think if you are an infrequent flyer, let's say, whose goals are just to get a free ticket somewhere nice, I think Southwest does a terrific program. It's fairly straightforward. You are awarded based on dollar spend. Your award that you could get is based on the cost of the ticket. They've actually raised the price just in the last week. If you get 125,000 points with them, you get a free companion seat, which is very nice.
Very valuable.
Very valuable. Now, on the other hand, if your goal is to go to Bora Bora, you know, or Tahiti or the Maldives, which is what the bloggers all write about, frankly, okay, then you have to start playing different games. And a lot of that has to do with getting credit cards to score the acquisition bonuses, because that's basically the last golden place. The credit card companies are so desperate for your business that they will give you a lot of airline points and airline miles. So, as I say, if you want to fly first class or business class to some exotic beach somewhere, then you have to play the entire game with the airline, with their partners, with their financial partners, in order to win that ticket. And that's a much more complicated game. I've always said, for 30 years I've said, why don't you buy based on quality of service, on schedule, on reliability, and worry about the points later? That is not a popular sentiment among the bloggers, because the bloggers only make money if they sell you a credit card. I'm not in the business of selling you anything other than information, so I try to speak the truth, and that truth hasn't changed for over 30 years. Do what works for you, and never spend a dime to get a mile that you otherwise, or a point that you otherwise wouldn't spend, because the airlines and the hotels are not going to give you something for nothing. So if you start spending your money to try and get their currency, you're going to lose.
the just to give an example, a gentleman, of looking on the website for the Embassy Suites in downtown Sacramento, which is a very popular property, and of course is within walking distance of the arena downtown. And on consecutive nights in early November, I'm guessing the second night is a Kings home game night, on consecutive nights you can get the Embassy Suites for either 42,000 points or 137,000 points. So that's the difference, over three times as much on what they consider a peak night. What Tom pointed out, Joe, before we started this taping our interview today, is that Tom asked the question, well, if the high numbers are higher than they used to be for peak times and stuff like that, are the low numbers lower than they used to be for non-peak times? And of course, I kind of laughed because the answer to that is no. There are fewer non-peak times.
No, with an asterisk. The airlines actually will have in their goal to make believe they're giving you something for nothing, which of course these programs are not about something for nothing, will have occasionally cut the off-peak price for a ticket, mostly domestic, below what they have been. The traditional rule was 25,000 anywhere in America for a round trip. Now you can sometimes do it for 10 or 15, but of course these are off-peak periods to off-peak destinations if you want to go to, say, Butte, Montana. The Embassy Suites example you just brought up is actually the Hilton Honors Program, and Hilton is the paradigm of this revenue-based system. If you want the opposite of that, I would make the case that if you go to a chain like Hyatt, which unfortunately is much smaller, while even they've devalued, you can stay at a property like, this is a ridiculous comparison to downtown Sacramento for a Kings game, but the very, very elegant Park Hyatt in Milan, Italy, will sometimes cost 300 euros a night, but during Fashion Week could cost 1,000 euros a night. Hyatt charges a flat 30,000 points to get a night in that hotel. And if you can get that hotel for 30,000 points compared to 120,000 points to stay downtown in Sacramento to watch a Kings game, I would say you're better off.
Joe, before we let you go here, I want to ask, by the way, we're talking to Joe Brancatelli. His website is joesentme.com. We're going to talk about that in a moment. Joe, you posted a couple things here today. We like to make people smarter travelers here on the Travel Guys. I thought this was really interesting. The item that you buy, someone asked you a question, what do you buy most frequently on the road?
And my answer was tape, either masking tape or duct tape. And what I explained, that has an endless number of uses. I mean, literally last month I was taping up a broken suitcase with some duct tape I overpriced, purchased in a store in Europe.
And speaking of travel hacks, Joe, when asked what your best travel hack was, I kind of identified this because it's something I've started doing lately. Please share.
Well, now, again, you got to remember, I'm a very frequent traveler who still has to go on the road at very short notice. And it's always chaotic. And I don't care how many times you've flown, how many years you've flown, those minutes before you leave, you know, are just chaotic. So what I have done over the years is make sure I replenish my kit bag when I return home and make sure that, you know, whatever toiletries I want in there, razor blades, whatever I carry with me is packed and ready to go at the end of the trip I've taken. So that when I have to rush out, I just grab the bag and go, and I don't have to worry if I have Q-tips or did I remember to bring my razor blades.
Yeah, because inevitably, when you get to the hotel, no matter where it is you're going, when you get there, whatever it is that you don't have is the one thing that can't be gotten within a mile of the hotel. It literally
doesn't
matter.
Well, you can get a razor blade at that $140,000 a night Embassy Suites in downtown Sacramento, but it'll probably cost $20 for a razor. And, you know, you can have a container of popcorn for $20.
There you go. Joe, if folks would like to see what you have, poke around your website a little bit, we will put a link at travelguysradio.com, and you can go and see what Joe has. There are lots of great columnists. We've had a couple of them on the program as guests. And like I said, it's real easy to spend a time getting an hour getting lost on Joe's website. Joe, thanks for all the information that you've shared today and for all the stuff you spit out on a regular basis. It's nice to talk to somebody who tells it like it is.
Anytime, guys. Go Kings.
And don't forget, you can hook up with Joe Sentme at joesentme.com. Better yet, go to travelguysradio.com, and you can find links to Joe as well as all of our guests there on the travelguysradio.com. Well, looks like it's about wrapping up. I was going to mention, when you go to Joe's website, some of the stuff is free, and some of it you have to pay for, but either way, it's certainly worth your time. Mark?
Well, it's about time to wrap up this edition of the Travel Guys, Mr. Romano. I am here on the island of Kauai, getting ready for some sports leisure travelers who are coming here in a few months. And really and truly, they call this the Garden Isle, and I don't want to let out a big secret all over town, but this is the best island in Hawaii. Not that there's a bad island, but Kauai is really a very special place. So I will look forward to joining you in the studio next Sunday.
Awesome, my friends. You stay well. We'll see you next time.
Remember, dance like nobody's watching.